Well, I'm looking forward to tonight's program. You know, lots of things have been going on around this planet. You know, here in the United States, for example, we get this incredible UFO story over O'Hare International Airport in Chicago. We get the Air Force Colonel taking some unbelievable photographs in Arkansas of something up there. We get reports in Hawaii. Now we get reports about UFOs in Iran, in Europe, in Africa, in South America. What is happening, and why now? In a moment, Dr. J.J. Hertak joins us. Maybe he can help shed some light on this incredible story. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. J.J. Hertak is the founder and president of the Academy for Future Science. He is a social scientist and scholar who has written, translated, published more than 15 books. Dr. Hertak is also an anthropologist, archaeologist, and he was instrumental in finding the Osiris tomb in Egypt through remote sensing. He's well known for his very provocative information that ranges from evidence of UFOs to the development of a new cosmology. And we're going to be talking with him tonight. A little bit later on, we'll be bringing in his wife, Desiree, also in the program. JJ, welcome back to Coast to Coast.
Thank you, George. I'm so happy to be back with you and the great work you're doing to bring the higher understanding to the peoples of the planet.
I've got to tell you, JJ, we've got to do it now because I have a feeling time is slipping away. Don't you feel that way?
I feel that way. In fact, I wanted to dedicate this program to my late colleague, Sidney Sheldon, who passed away today, who co-authored with me the famous book, Doomsday Conspiracy, in 1991, which went into 35 languages.
Oh, my gosh. What happened to him?
Well, Sidney had a problem, a health problem. He was an elderly gentleman who was as a worldwide renowned writer of 35 of the top sellers, I Dream of Jeannie, Heart to Heart, many of the outstanding contributions he has made across
sure.
the board. But time took its toll, and I know he wanted to have contact with the other side. I was with him just a month or so ago, and he and his family related seen a spacecraft off the shores of Malibu, where he was living his final weeks, and he was very, very important in the whole UFO story because of this important novel he wrote, Doomsday Conspiracy.
And, of course, JJ, you've been very important, too, in not only this, but the research that you've been doing for so many years. You know, there's so many things I want to talk with you about tonight, JJ, but this UFO flap that seems to be occurring all around the planet right now, it's very strange. I mean, it's almost as if we're being monitored for some reason.
I think you could say that. Many of these craft, I believe, operate as thermostats, airborne devices and interdimensional levels of technology, which have the ability to make a probe at the human community in violation of the given laws of science as we define them, retrieve information, and take inventory of the movements of target populations. And so we are reaching a very critical level. We could call this discussion UFOs and critical mass, where all things are coming together, and we must see the big picture if we're going to make any sense of where we go from this point.
If we're being visited, are they going to step in and try to bail us out of any kind of calamity, or are they just going to monitor things and watch them?
Well, this was the question Sidney Sheldon and I asked astronaut Gordon Cooper when he was with us and told us the story over Germany in 1951 when he saw a flotilla of spaceships. The question is, why did they not intervene and prevent the Cold War at that particular point? Why did they not come down and, as it were, intervene on behalf of the East Bloc nations and the West nations that were at stone's throw away from a nuclear event? So,
right.
The idea is apparently they are watching us, humanity, as a great experiment to see whether we will take a further slide towards technological self-destruction or find within ourselves the spirituality and the cosmology that can move us into a whole new direction. Gordon Cooper was a great man of faith, and unbeknownst to many of his associates, he did believe there was a God, there was a divine purpose, and told Sidney and I that he felt indeed there was going to be a positive help in the process of growing up in the universe. So I am an optimist in the sense that I believe that we have cosmic cousins who will reach out to us in some way, even though the signs show that the majority of these ET events tend to veer to the negative.
I remember, JJ, interviewing Gordon Cooper when I was doing my local show at the time in St. Louis. And I just could never forget how above board he was, how honest he was, how interested he was in telling it the way he saw it. And when he was done telling me about what he saw in the 50s, in terms of these craft, I got to tell you, of anybody I've ever interviewed where you would simply sit back and say, my gosh, they must be real, it was that interview I had with Gordon Cooper.
Indeed. In fact, he did mention in a letter he drafted to the United Nations to Ambassador Griffith that he did not have the pleasure of sitting in the UFO, but he did see landings. And he did explain to Mr. Sheldon, myself, that at the Edwards Air Base facility, he did witness a landing. He did recognize there were beings that looked humanoid as well as human, and that we had really to go through this orientation period of realizing that we had to be qualified to take on our responsibilities if we were going to go into the depths of outer space.
Incredible individual, and will be missed. Let's get into our time machine for a moment, JJ, and go back to 1977. We're at the first World Congress of UFOs in Acapulco, Mexico. Tell me a little bit about that event.
Well, that was very important because we had leading thinkers, the likes of Dr. Hynek, Dr. Jacques Vallée, many key people, Hans Petersen from Denmark with the Danish Air Force, many very, very gifted professionals, engineers, people connected with the Mexican Air Force, and I was a young investigator at the time. I was privileged to speak there at the major Congress because of some unusual experiences that I had recorded and documented. And also Enrique Castillo was there, who Timothy Good thinks very, very highly of in terms of his incredible experiences. And so we had a great panel of experts with Pedro Feliz, the well-known TV journalist from Mexico City who covered these events. And at that time, I did mention to the press in several reports that this was a meeting for experts, but there would be a period of time that we would go through, some 30 years, where another level of information would have to come out that would have to be for the people who would have to see these events face-to-face and see these documents more in circulation to really come to their wits and realize that we're going to go through a quantum change very, very quickly.
Well, then here we are now. We're at that 30-year ebb. Do you think something will get released? Do you think there'll be some kind of disclosure?
I definitely think the disclosure process is in process. We all have anticipated the release of documents from the French CNES, which is the Center for National Space Studies, that will bring us up on some 6,000 documents, and this will go online. People from all backgrounds and cultures will have a chance to really look at the strange sightings, to examine them in depth and come to their own conclusion. So this ability to reach out through the information revolution worldwide and put this out is a key sign on one major government really taking on its responsibilities of bringing factual reports of some significance and depth to the peoples of Mother Earth.
What do you think the French reports will say?
Well, I have one that I think would be part of the database, which was the famous flight of the French airliner 3532, which in 1994 flew from Nice to London, and over the area of Paris, the commander, Jean Dubuc, wrote, if I can quote him, it was a particularly calm flight without particular problem. We arrived above the high clouds when a steward who was in the cockpit noticed an object which he thought was a weather balloon. This object was seen by the co-pilot, myself, a few moments afterwards. He goes on at the end of his report to say, this object seemed to us absolutely abnormal by its size, which seemed immense. Its dark red color and fuzzy edges were notable. I had the impression to observe a gigantic lens in evolution. It did not resemble anything we had seen in our flying careers. Now, this is at 34,500 feet above Earth. A big population center of Paris is below. This is just one of many, many documents that will trigger interest in the light phenomena and what I would call the paranormal aspects of public reaction to these events, which really do not have any logic of why and why these particular asymmetries should be there at that particular altitude for such an interesting period of time. Radar recordings by the Operational Center of Air Defense also confirmed the sightings in approximately 10 seconds of flight. So we have a database which is very, very sophisticated. We have events that are taking place above target population centers of Mother Earth. And I think the question is, why is this taking place at this time?
That is the question. You did a lot of work into a UFO event in South Africa, which didn't happen too long ago.
I've had several opportunities to work in South Africa over the last 20-some years, and I have on my website, futurescience.org, 10 minutes of an interview done by my colleagues who recently were in the area of what is called Lepalale, which is a small city near the Botswana border to the north of South Africa. And those out there who hear the program who can go to futurescience.org and download will actually hear the interview with the young gal by the name of Leonie Ross, who reports some paranormal events took place at a time when she heard the sound of thousands of Airbus turbines, as she refers to it, strong vibrations that shook the windows of her house. Now, this happened just recently in December, December 30th, just a month ago, and we've got pictures on our website showing that there was strange color phenomena. A strange pillar-like object was seen with clouds of different color, and suddenly a massive explosion took place, suggesting that this may have been some type of technology that was either being tested by some government in the area or it was a genuine UFO event. So we had a field investigation effort to go and talk to the person who chartered a helicopter to scour the area to look for details, to talk to other people in the community who described the object as very huge. And in all terminology aside, the event doesn't fit the classical situation of a meteorite. It's clearly a UFO object of some sort, a gigantic event to take place.
If you had to weigh odds that these craft would be earthbound, you know, built by man, what percent would you throw that way, JJ?
I would say it could easily be upwards of 3 to 5% of these events could be what some would call interterrestrial or terrestrially based, in the sense that they have their source of origin someplace here on our planet. I know the gentleman who took over the French SEPRA group, right, Yves Dillard, a man of great distinction who had a background with the Concorde plane development and the Ariane rocket system for the French government, believes that something on the order of 13.5% of these events are real. But if they are real, what percentage of those are related to origins here on planet Earth? My suspicion is these questions can only be answered by more documentation that would have to come out from other government sources.
And if you only had one case that was bona fide and extraterrestrial, that's all you need to prove the existence in these.
Well, I was down in Ecuador a year ago with several people in a remote area of southern Ecuador, And at night, one of the mountains lit up literally with colors. The natives of the area said that that particular mountain had been a station for extraterrestrial probes coming in and out of the Ecuadorian area. So in the area of southern Ecuador, I had the privilege of talking briefly with ex-astronaut Brian O'Leary and others who have observed that there are key areas on our planet that seem to be the beehives of activity, where the extraterrestrials may be returning to scenes of experimentation or where they seeded certain biological experiments tens of thousands of years ago. All questions that are up in the air, but in so many words, I believe the reason for visitation is multi-level, including the nuclear activity, the possibilities of technological destruction, the possibilities of planetary suicide if we do not control our planetary and environmental situation.
I was going to say, the Earth changes. It is very interesting, JJ, that this planet is going through rapid planetary changes. I mean rapid changes. What we could have just talked about a few years ago all seems to be coming to pass. And all of a sudden we get this UFO activity at the same time. You know, I'm the kind of guy that says there are no coincidences. Things happen for a reason. The possibilities here are very strange.
Well, another investigator we'd like to mention is J.J. Valesco from GAPON and other areas of French research on UFOs, who came out with his book, OVNIs, The Evidence, and he was also connected with SAPRO and suggested that there was a connection with nuclear facilities that were being watched and targeted by UFO activity. I had the opportunity in 1986 to be in Brazil in an area called Salto de los Campos in southern Brazil, which is the center of IMPE, which is the Brazilian equivalent of NASA, giving a lecture. And at that time, a flotilla of spaceships came over the area. And as a result, inquiries showed that the Brazilians were building a private nuclear facility that the citizens of Brazil were not aware of. The long and short of this was it sort of blew the whistle on an illegal operation, and the developments on this nuclear facility were neutralized. So it could be argued, along with our other French colleagues, that there seems to be a real serious concern about the positive UFOs, that we as a humanity may be losing it, and the uncertainty footprint of unpredictability is still out there. We are being watched very carefully to see whether we're going to take this great leap forward as a positive, unified civilization, or whether we're going to fall back to tribal warfare and to the use of high technology to deal with situations that may be very, very unpleasant.
Stay with us, JJ. We'll talk about these UFOs over China and Iran when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, indeed. And we'll be back in a moment with Dr. J.J. Hertek. Lots of great information here about UFO and extraterrestrial activity right here on planet Earth. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Now, welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. J.J. Hertek. J.J., Iran, China, getting UFO reports, lots of them. If I didn't know better, I'd say we had some high technology and we were doing a little spying over there.
That's right, and I think this is one of the reasons why Russia and Iran have entered into an agreement finalizing the construction of the so-called Soros satellite for Iran, as well as giving the Iranians the Tor M1 anti-aircraft system. So a lot of things have gone on behind the scenes. Obviously, they have reported seeing UFOs over what they call the Bushehr and the Isfahan province areas, where they have nuclear facilities. But, again, it could be questionable whether these are real UFOs or man-made UFOs or ET platforms with very sophisticated devices of monitoring situations on the ground. My belief is the UFOs that had appeared in 1976 and more recently are here to warn the Iranians as well as the Russians that if the countries go in the direction of further nuclear development, there could be some very tragic consequences for that region as well as the planet. And we may move a couple of minutes closer to midnight in terms of the human civilization. So this recent report out of Iran, and there's been several going back to the 10th of January of this year in the Baruz Mountains, reporting officially by the Deputy Governor General of that particular region of the Kerman province, also suggest there have been several sightings, and the authorities there are aware of these unusual objects with yellow rays and red rays emanating from the objects. So these are, again, questions that are very, very intriguing, suggesting a paranormal side to all of this.
Do they believe, though, do the Iranians believe that it's us?
I believe, logically, they believe that UFOs have been back engineered in the West, and some of the overhead flights of their nuclear facilities may be coming from an inner group of very, very sophisticated military technologists who can create these shining objects. I think the more sensible Iranians, who know that their country has been the great archive of civilization, realize that their country has been visited even before the recent government showed us interested in its nuclear program, and that there's obviously other forces out there in the universe that are looking in at Mother Earth. And if we put this in context of what we've seen here in the West, we've had a rash of nuclear facilities over our major, UFO activities over our major nuclear facilities from Los Alamos in 1948 to more recent times at the Ellsworth Air Force bases in 68, and I can go on and on and quote about 20 different instances where our ICBMs have been made inert. So the situation, if we are to read between the lines, is both the U.S. as well as the other countries of the world are on standby, that they have to be very cautious about the unexplored regions of space harboring technologies that may be looking down and deciding next course of activity.
Wasn't a UFO spotted, JJ, over Chernobyl during that disaster?
That's right. And the question is, why was not there greater intervention on behalf of the children of Chernobyl? I did talk to one of the Russian researchers who was sent over after the Chernobyl effect, and this person said that the facilities are still leaking radiation levels that may turn the Black Sea into a Dead Sea, that this is a story that's still continuing, and that the UFO events that we're seeing may have been there taking notes as to why the Russians had let their system be taken down to such an unhealthy state of what we call the China syndrome.
I wonder how many people have truly gotten sick or died just because of Chernobyl.
We've talked to individuals from Finland to Hungary who have reported cases in their own country of children having abnormalities. And, of course, we know the thousands of cases in Ukraine of stillborn births and other defects that are very, very grotesque. So these situations do not speak kindly to what went on in those dreadful moments of Chernobyl. But, again, if we can use this as a model, it is very, very clear that all over the planet, low-flying elusive objects have targeted our military and nuclear facilities, including green fireballs that have appeared from time to time, somehow neutralizing the effects of radiation.
You did some work with regards to the late Harvard psychiatrist and a dear friend of all of ours, John Mack. Tell me a little bit about your involvement there.
Well, John and I were involved with working in South Africa with children and other persons who were subject to alien abductions. In one instance in Zimbabwe, this little country to the north, John and his associates and later myself had an opportunity to talk to the children who were visited in 1994 on September 16th. 62 children saw very strange beings with long heads, with within arms and legs. Their eyes look like rugby balls, and their black outfits were very, very shining. The psychological ramifications were such that the children, who were calm and collective, said that they felt the visitation was due to the situation of our planetary environment going into a very, very serious disruption, what our scientists would call physical collapse if we were not more careful of how things were being done with our technology. At the same time, I was operating out of Mexico on a case on the same date. This is called the Metepec incident outside of Mexico City, where one large vehicle with seven smaller vehicles manifested. And the details of that event were similar to the profile of Zimbabwe, whereby strange, grotesque forms were seen. The number of ships was similar in construction to what was seen in Zimbabwe. The people in Mexico were operating out of great fear on the same day that this event happened. Over in Africa, the children over in Africa of different cultural backgrounds, however, seem to have a more positive take on the event. They had the feeling that the ETs were interested in the children, that this was some type of orientation that they were going to. They were fascinated by the strange beings. In any event, John and I compared notes with the events in Mexico and in Zimbabwe, and we saw some very interesting profiles. He, being the wiser and more gifted in terms of psychiatry, was able to look at this as a positive sign. Now, this was one event that we looked at together. There was another in the examination of the Zulu shaman, Kredon Lutwa, where John and I looked at this gentleman, a very wise elder, who was abducted and put through the ropes, so to speak, in terms of having his body, his precious bodily fluids, removed and examined, and a short report also was made of this, which is going to go into a film I'm going to be bringing out called The Voice of Africa, which is a signal of how each tribe of Africa and Latin America is being visited at this time by what they believe is the star people as a final warning for things to come.
I was going to say, do the people indigenous to those areas call them star people? Is that what they believe them to be, or do they think that they might be gods, JJ?
Well, there's a whole vocabulary, and this is why John and I feel that the ontology, or the whole basis of defining reality, has to be changed in terms of what we call scientific truth, spiritual knowledge, or truth. The terminology used by these native tribes varies from star people to visitors, to what they call the master beings of light or the elder brothers. Each culture has its own vocabulary, and this has made it very, very difficult for scientists within the UFO community to take these reports by social scientists and anthropologists as being credible, as having any substance. But when you put these reports together and look at it in terms of a holistic picture, it is very clear that all parts of the world are seeing more and more of these paranormal events, more and more of these mind-over-matter events, and more of these events, particularly in the case of children being touched in their heart and in their mind, saying, in essence, we as a planetary humanity must take responsibility for our actions. We must see the larger picture that Mother Earth, as we know it, may pass away very, very soon if we do not take control of how we use our energies.
They must be aware of something, JJ. They see something. Obviously, they must be able to tap into the future for all this to be occurring. Now, you know, these are the strange, I don't believe in coincidences. These are the strange probabilities. I mean, we've got the Mayan calendar date coming up rapidly now, 2012. We've got all these UFO reports. We've got all this talk of South Korea nukes, Iranian nukes in the future. We've got all these things going on at the same time. We've got the sun truly heating up. We have global warming, whether it's cyclical or man-made. It's all happening at the same time. And then we get these extensive UFO reports from all over the planet. I mean, it's almost as if somebody's ready to tell us something.
Exactly. And we have to step back and realize that if you look very carefully at the traditions of these great cultures, all of them speak of what is called by anthropologists as the myth of the eternal return, where the creators or designers of these historic traditions come back to the scene of the experiment and help co-author or co-evolve humanity into a new state of deliverance or liberation. In the Orthodox theologies, this would be called the theophany or the second coming or the messianic period or the deliverance. I would like to look at it as a collective experience where we begin to grow up and realize that we have a divine spark within us to do wonderful things if we can put our energies together. And if we can synergize our energies together and reach out positively and ask for guidance by our positive counterparts, as the children did in the schools of South Africa and Zimbabwe and other places. In Brazil, I believe that the lights in the sky can help us go through this very critical phase of being contacted by the negative, non-benign forces that are also out there, which are the concern of the government leaders of the world.
Okay, the phenomena of UFO reports, it's been ongoing since the beginning of mankind. They, in some cases, thought that they were gods. Have they changed? Has the phenomena changed from years gone back, or is it still the same?
In these respective cultures, they all feel that their resources are running out, and that we're really down to really the last period of time. I just came back last year from the Xavante Indian Nation in central Brazil. I'm an honorary member of this nation. They were explaining how the rivers were drying up, how the resources were dwindling, non-renewable resources were being depleted. The climate changes were noticeable on all sides, and as you said, not only the sun is heating up, but all of the planets within our solar system are heating up, and we are looking at a very bleak situation. But with this, there's also a global mind change where people are realizing through all of this that we are part of a great schoolhouse called Mother Earth, and if we can see these things in proper perspective and look more intelligently at the myth behind the myth and the science behind the science, the science on the high frontier, as well as the historic teachings that we have the gifts of survival and redesign, co-evolution, are quite apparent that we will reach out and be helped if we make the final efforts. And that is basically the thrust of what I felt with John Mack and others I've worked with, that we are going through a duality phase of an upward spiral and a downward spiral simultaneously. If we take the opportunities to go into the upper spiral, we will take the quantum leap and graduate into the cosmos, into the university of the cosmos, as Homo Galacticus. If we become unnerved and repressive and too reactive and pull back really to the cultural elites and see only a military model as solving our problems, I feel that we will neutralize ourselves and the great God-given gifts that we have to see a whole new global civilization emerge with the help of our cosmic counterparts.
Do you think, JJ, that the visitation might be a threat? And the threat is, if you Earthlings continue to try to annihilate yourselves, we're going to annihilate you all. Possible?
Well, yes, I think that's a good question to ask. Sidney Sheldon asked late President Ronald Reagan whether he had a visitation of a face-to-face meeting with an alien. He said no, but he did feel that there had to be some type of threat to get people on this planet to get their wits, their focus together because of just the lethargy and the realities that we face as a material-based civilization. I do feel that what is unusual now is the vast number of abnormal activities taking place, the greater spectrum of events being recorded, the realities of nuclear and geopolitical events that are triggering some of these flybys, and what could be called the increase of abductions that are taking place on a phenomenal level.
JJ, as this evolves and it's happening quickly, are we running into situations where government is scurrying around trying to minimize these reports?
I think the government authorities, and we have outstanding thinkers on this side of the Atlantic, are looking at paradigms that may not be classical in terms of the logic, in terms of the scientific models. We have to look at the possibilities of interaction with new concepts of hyperdimensional consciousness, with civilizations that play with different rules, with certain changes on our planet that may have been programmed for this period of time. In other words, what we're seeing is a great test within our humanity,
sure,
whether or not we're going to bow down to UFOs as gods or realize that we are the ones who will graduate if we go beyond the test and simply see this as a stepping stone to the fantastic gifts we have of a higher partnership with the ancient text called the God-man or God-woman partnership that comes as a result of growing up and realizing that they are no higher than we are, that we share several evolutionary dimensions and tracks with them, and we can co-participate if we develop really the incentives of a whole new psychology of consciousness, a whole new space physics of realizing we are but one of many civilizations, a whole new sociology of realizing we can build cities and civilizations in outer space, and a whole new space law to take responsibility of governing safely the whole surroundings of Mother Earth and the neighboring planets, and not do, as we've seen recently in China, the blowing up of a satellite with a military weapon. I think this is a sign that we are losing it, and if we do not have a safe space law in place, I believe the high frontier could be a society for pirating technologies and a terrible situation for our children's children.
How fast would it take for extraterrestrials to take out all our satellites?
I think, well, some years ago, I was with one of the incorporators of Intelsat. It was the International Satellite Communication System. He was a close friend of President Kennedy. And while I was talking to him, we received a call from Washington that one of our communication satellites had been taken out of orbit by an ET system. It was just like that. In a moment, it was in one orbit, and the next moment, it was our technology was placed in another orbit. So these superior civilizations have the ability within the blinking of an eye to take down all of our satellites if they want to. And this is why I believe we are facing the realities of what General MacArthur said, that we must face the responsibilities of war in space.
More to come in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. With our special guest tonight, Dr. J.J. Hertak, we're going to bring his wife in, Desiree, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're bringing in Desiree Hertak as well. She's an international relations expert, bringing an interpersonal understanding of ancient texts, especially those dealing with feminine. They travel throughout the world to investigate ancient cultures, and they work closely with indigenous people as well. Hello, Desiree. How are you?
Hi. Pleasure to be on your show, George.
Likewise. JJ, tell me a little bit about the relationship when you two work together.
Well, Desiree has a multidisciplinary background. She's a computer scientist. She's a great artist, photographer. She also is a professor of international relations at the State University of New York and has worked with me at the United Nations on several case studies. She was with me at the UN in 1996 when I presented the Virginia case to a private UN session. So she was able to take pictures and do documentation of some of the field samples. She's highly qualified in so many areas, but the higher scientific side is her expertise.
Desiree, what is all your take? You've heard JJ and I talking about these various UFO flaps all around this planet. What's your take on all of this?
Well, honestly, I think that there is a consciousness mindset that we're putting out, and as you know, it hasn't been that positive recently. If you go back and look at the years of massive UFO sightings, it all started mainly in the 40s. Of course, there were sightings earlier than that, but the 40s, which is, you know, the atomic bomb blast, you get into the 50s and 60s when everyone was developing nuclear technology, a little bit into the 70s, and then it really slows down. And when there was this message of peace in the 80s and 90s and changes, there was fewer and fewer sightings. And then we're starting to get them again in the year 2000 and on now. So we feel that there is some sort of connection between this, that we're putting out this energy, and there are those ETs that are watching us.
Tell me about your work with ancient texts. Were you ever able to uncover or verify that there were visitations and that early civilizations tried to illustrate it, tried to at least talk about it in their texts?
Well, one of the places we've worked extensively has been in Egypt, and we do believe that there is some connection with star systems and the Egyptian cosmology. Not only is the pyramids connected with Orion, but some of the ancient texts of the Egyptians talk about Orion, and this seems to be a key factor. Many people want to know what stars are important, what are the extraterrestrials all about, and if you go back to these ancient texts, some of them really spell it out.
Why planet Earth, JJ? Why us? Why do we get visited?
I think we're the prize of several experiments, and I think this is the problem we have. Our UFO experts that are using one measuring stick to try to put all of this in terms of a historic chronology overlook the fact that some 300,000 years before, there had been other civilizations seeded by off-planetary societies. We call them extrasolar forms of intelligence, and we have had the opportunity to document on film some very unusual artifacts under the sands of the Giza Plateau and others, showing a very advanced level of technology in the form of crystalline objects and spheres. And I won't go into detail at this time, but there will be reports, I believe, in the years ahead that will show that there was an archival database in Egypt whereby the ancient wisdom keepers there brought together all of the stories from the Middle East and deposited them in a type of time capsule waiting for the human race to put together the documents of its own evolution with the picture of being prepared for citizenship in outer space. So all of the vectors, past, present, and future, have to be assembled, and this is why we are so interested in looking behind the scenes in Egypt, in China, in Japan, where we've also worked, and more recently in Brazil, where we work with the indigenous people and looking at some of their artifacts.
We'll do this almost as if we're doing a roundtable discussion with both of you, so both of you can chime in, jump in anytime you want here. I won't direct the questions to anybody. Did you go on any type of travels where you uncovered and unearthed pyramids in other lands outside of Egypt?
We've done extensive work in the Yucatan Peninsula, in Yanaguni, Japan. You probably know this through the work of the Japanese, Dr. Kimura and others, mm-hmm. who've documented off the coast of what they call Yanaguni, the southwestern portion of Japan, the small island just off the coast of Okinawa, show these underwater landforms that resemble pyramidal structures. In my book, which I published in 73, called The Book of Knowledge, Keys of Enoch, I give a world map of 12 different regions of earlier civilization, and one of the longitudinal lines matches the area of Yanaguni and Taiwan and that particular area that I feel is an ancient place that will change our whole concept of historic anthropology.
And what's really interesting, that same grid line, so to speak, also goes right through an area called the Isle of Flores, and that is where those small hobbit-like people, the Homo Florensians,
right.
were found. It's the same line, and it seems that that was a very significant area. Of course, if you go back to the Australian myths, you find that there was an ancient culture that was already in touch with the stars in the dream time.
So if there's any significance to the new evidence, is it would be to open the back door to our history, which is much older, to show the cross-pollinization of different cultures, leading to a much bigger picture of several off-planetary intelligences that we're interacting with. And this requires us to be more cautious, as our experts have been in the United States over the last 60-some years, of not rushing ahead to be classifying too much until they would find out what is the key to all of this. I feel they were much closer to putting together not a key but a Rosetta Stone of seeing how these various cultures all say the same thing, that we are but one of many experiments, and we are a prized experiment because of our uniqueness as combining both the spiritual as well as the physical emotions and consciousness that makes us unique.
And we can't overlook the biblical culture and the scroll of Job in the Bible, which is one of the oldest scrolls. And it says there's a connection with Kemah and Kizil, which even the ancient Hebrew scholars have related to Orion and the Pleiades, two key areas. So this is the area of programming of God's creation. So we have to see a practicality in that now, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years later, to say maybe there really is intelligence connected with these higher star systems.
Do you agree with the work of Zechariah Sitchin?
I think, with all due respect, I've lectured with him in Germany and other places, that his knowledge of Assyrian text and Akkadian text is more centered toward the Babylonian system than to what we would call relevant in the Judeo-Christian heritage. In other words, God doesn't fly a flying saucer in the oversimplification of the God themes or the angelic to the extraterrestrial, I think, is a step in the wrong direction. We prefer to think of the higher intelligence as ultra-terrestrial, not extraterrestrial, because of the manifestations and a personal experience that I had, which set me out on this course of activity 33 years ago, where a morphogenic door opened and I saw beings of light and realized that there indeed was a much higher management level to the organization of our local universe.
And since we're the Academy for Future Science, we don't only look at the past, we also look to the future. And one of the new technologies this coming out of Cambridge and Harvard is what's called brain theory, which is from membrane. And it talks about different levels of brains that we can live on. And to us, the extraterrestrial seem to be working with more like the third, fourth, and even fifth dimension, because they can go through walls. They can, you know, do different things, even sometimes with time. There's a manipulation level there. But we also feel what exists on those other levels, those other brains, and we feel what we call ultra-terrestrial intelligence, that they can really work on the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th dimension, as these super string theories are talking about.
So there's a much higher level of cosmic development that is watching the ETs sort out their roles in dealing with experiments on planets like Mother Earth. And so the larger picture is not only the graduation of the human race into a new level of consciousness, but also the graduation or the neutralization of EET cultures that are either positive or negative in their objectives.
Could they be watched by the angelic realm, a higher superior group?
Absolutely, and that's what I feel is behind really the omnidirectionality of the superior group.
And we actually think that we've been protected on this planet for the last 4,000 years by some of these intelligences. Because let's face it, if 4,000 years ago we had regular contact with extraterrestrials, our whole civilization would be totally different. We would actually be subservient to whatever they've been telling us, whether they're the good guys or the bad guys. So they've kind of let us evolve ourselves to develop ourselves. As my husband said earlier, this is Schoolhouse Earth, and now we're starting to graduate.
If anyone wants to take a look, if I can just interject this, at the Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, the great Sanskrit text of India, they speak of Indra's dart, the Brahma weapon, these things that were used thousands of years ago as a metaphor for technologies that were destroyed in the space of Earth time. It would seem to indicate that there was competition amongst the lower gods or the guardians, and this has happened several times, and all of this is a bit unsettling to European anthropologists and Orientalists who want to see a gradual evolution, not taking into account the fact that there may have been situations of vast planetary destruction in the past, which is why these ancient texts are so important as barometers.
Well, there's no question about that. Do you think that Adam and Eve might have been extraterrestrials or humans? Maybe they were genetically altered.
Well, this is interesting. I know we connect with a lot of people that are working with the abduction cases, and they all want to think that we are hybrids. But from our information, that actually we have an Adamic race, which is not limited to this planet. And when we start seeing these extraterrestrials, as some people already have, you have the grays, you have the reptilians, you have the insectoid, and you have what we could call, or we would be more familiar with the word, Adamic race.
From the word Adam, or one of human proportion or distinction.
But in actuality, those would not be necessarily hybrids. The fact is that it is a unique species that exists throughout the whole cosmos. And so the grays and other levels of intelligence don't mind playing with us and making hybrids, you know, civilizations between us and them.
Dr. David Jacobs thinks that there is a far sinister reason for visitation. Do any of you agree with that?
I just talked to him a couple of days ago. I like David very much, and I think he's certainly putting his thumbprint on what we would call the unfriendly competition that feels it has to use the human race for reproduction experiments, and that there is evidence of a vast hybridization program in the process of being brought into the open at the present time. I did have an opportunity some years ago to talk with one of the major government leaders of Europe privately, who was really upset that the Americans could not intercept the fact that citizens of his country were being taken up in spacecraft for the removal of precious bodily fluids and the resulting hybridization process. Then he also mentioned, of course, this was beyond the control of any Earth government. So David Jacobs is going to play a very important role in his new book, which I believe is going to show really the competition taking place between several levels of non-Earth levels or categories of intelligence that we must be aware of to make the right choices.
So we do have a slight problem with him, as much as we do like what he's done in the past, is that he thinks everything is an abduction. And we had a very good friend in South Africa who wrote a book, Beyond the Light Barrier, and she had an experience in 1956 and around the 1950s where she actually had contact with an alien called Archon, and she was in very good contact with him. I mean, he would come and visit her, and she would go up in the spacecraft, and one time she went and spent 4 months on his planet. This is Elizabeth Klar. She's pretty famous for being one of the pioneers on this level of ET contact. But, you know, it was not an abduction in that sense. So when you think everything is an abduction, everything's missing time, I mean, this is a real experience, and I don't think anyone could really, you know, say that she was abducted.
Again, there's so many sides to this question, and this is why the science of abductions and hybridization has to be explored. I've come up with a new DVD on the very topic of alien-human hybrids and the use of music as a countermeasures to protect the person who naively enters into associations with manifestations of these smaller gray aliens so he or she can be protected.
With music? Explain that, JJ.
We find that that everything in life is vibrations, and if we can orchestrate the right vibrations, we can put around our body, as shown by research at IBM through Marcel Vogel and other specialists who have worked with psychotronics and the paranormal, that the body can support a type of electromagnetic shield or umbrella so that it can deflect unwanted thought forms or signals going into the brain. In other words, we as human beings are both vessels of light and creativity, but we are also what scientists call biotransducers. We are able to pull in energies, wanted and unwanted, from all over the universe. So if we can change our vibration, so to speak, and build an energy field around our body of protection, what the ancient biblical scholars called the shields of light, then much of this can be deflected. And to that end, the late musical great Ellis Coltrane and I participated in putting together an album entitled The Sacred Language of Ascension, which is going to be available in February, which I recommend to our global audience as a starting point of how leading musicians and musicologists are recognizing that music and psychotronics play a very important role if it can be put together properly.
I think it might have played a role in moving some of the blocks that constructed the pyramids.
Exactly. We have found that there's a certain harmonic that exists within all pyramids, from those in China to those in Yucatan to those in Egypt. And I've shown many students at the various universities one event in Egypt whereby we were able to create an acoustical signal, and suddenly there was a light explosion that took place briefly inside the Great Pyramid, which was captured on film. This event is very, very powerful. It's hard for me to describe it without a picture, but those who are interested should go to my website and order what is called the Living Capstone. It's a actual audio tape that deals with the sounds that were used inside the Great Pyramid of Egypt that created these paranormal experiences of what scientists would call standing columnar waves or energy forms that were created by the vibrations inside the pyramids and other structures similar to pyramids. So there's a whole dimension of music, acoustics, and physics that goes hand in hand with evolution, and I feel that this is the missing chord that is coming out into discussion as we go more and more into the 21st century.
Do you think Edward Lead Scotland out there at the Coral Gables down there in Homestead, Florida, did the same thing when he built that facility?
Well, I know we talked about this once before on the Art Bell Show, that a friend of ours was going to be purchasing the area when it was up for sale, and they found that there was copper wires all around it with special a motor, and they feel that he had a way of working with the frequencies and the vibrations to raise these massive stones.
Now, that's one of the first times I've ever heard, Desiree, of that. Copper wires all over the place?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what he was told when he was looking at buying the place in the 1970s. And as soon as, unfortunately, when he died and they came in, they just tore it down because it looked like a mess. But that's what he had all along the walls. And then there is this one little area where he had his motor. The motor's still there, but the lines of the copper wires have been completely taken down, unfortunately.
That is amazing. Well, stick with us. Desiree, also, next hour, you're more than welcome to join us with phone calls with JJ if you want. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll be back with our two special guests, JJ and Desiree Hertak, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Isn't it fascinating, you two, that ancient civilizations all over the planet, India, in South America, all talk of a figure much like Christ that visited them, that did not look like them, and then he vanished, he left, in every civilization?
That's right, George. From Quetzalcoatl to beings that would float above the earth showing paranormal skills, powers of levitation, powers of biolocation, these are the central figures for the social myths, the religious traditions, even the arcane scientific traditions that we find all over the world. What is important, however, is they all point to a much higher design of life that comes from realities beyond planet Earth. And this is what I think is part of the great critical mass that we're reaching when we put together the new archaeology with the new culture history, with the evidences of paranormal consciousness events, with the children of the planet, with the fact that we have very sophisticated technologies, remote sensing, that are picking up, as we saw over Campeche, Mexico in 2005, large aerial objects that were invisible to the human eye but visible to forward infrared, that we are suddenly being surrounded by whole levels of reality that we're not prepared to handle until we go back and in humility, as our ancestors showed, that we can enter into a whole new way of looking at this as a challenge rather than a threat. A challenge to quickly grow up and put all of this information in proper balance. And I believe that is the inner harmonic that these pyramidal temples and structures are trying to teach us, that part of this initiation into cosmic citizenship comes from the way that we are able to change what I would call the concept of the lower thought forms into the higher thought forms.
And what's interesting, of course, is there is an ancient book called the Book of Adam and Eve, which my husband's given some commentary on, and it talks about, even just from the Bible, how Adam was able to go to the gates of paradise. And, of course, most people think paradise is on this planet, but in actuality, when you really read the ancient text, you find that paradise was not on this planet. It was actually in the heavens. So Adam was able to go onto the planet and then off the planet, and he probably came from another planet and came down here and kind of got stuck down here for some reason. Of course, many people blame Eve, but that seems to be more the creative side of life. So she brought into life this ability to be kind of stuck on this planet with in garments of skin versus having her original higher vibration.
So the archetypal story of the parents has within it the nuance of a much greater story of creation. We will call the biogenesis experiment of how we were modeled according to intelligence already in operation of the higher worlds, in that we are simply reflecting down here on Mother Earth that which has preceded us. And the whole reality of civilizations millions of years ahead of us in evolution is a bit frightening and a threat to those who do not believe these myths have anything to say except a sociological story for children. But we believe there's a profound cosmology behind it, showing us that our ancestors did work with other worlds, did incorporate mathematics, astronomy, and the gifts of higher knowledge from other worlds, and left behind, as it were, time capsules or information centers that we would use in the great ascent.
JJ, are you a believer that by the base of the Sphinx, by the foot, there is a hall of records that Edgar Cayce said was there?
Well, this we've discovered in 1997 with ground-penetrating radar, close to that area to be the locale of what was called the Tomb of Osiris. I was part of the team that made the discovery, which later was dramatized by Zahi Hawass 2 years later in 1999 on a Fox International news release taking credit for this. But we were the first. We've got film documentation to show the actual underground areas. And quite candidly, there's more to the story than meets the eye. As you know, back in the early 90s, we also participated with others who were responsible for using ground-penetrating radar to look beneath the paw of the Sphinx, and that eventuated into a documentary called The Mystery of the Sphinx, which won an Emmy, and John Anthony West was really the principal mind behind the team that made this unusual association.
But in recent years, some of the eastern countries, so to speak, of Europe have used their technology for remote sensing around the Sphinx, and it does seem their technology has gotten deeper than ours did in the early 90s, and it does seem that there is some sort of channel, especially aligned with the Sphinx and the Central Pyramid. So there probably is some sort of corridor, and of course the Tomb of Osiris is actually right on that causeway of the Middle Pyramid.
The question is, what does ufology have to do with Egyptology? And again, this is suggesting that if we look at the other artifacts along the Nile, we will see that there is a clear depiction of what some would call aerial craft, levitation craft from other dimensions. We feel that there is a higher connection of Egypt as being really the central time capsule of information, and the whole depiction of the solar boats is a clue to planetary ascent and work with the higher worlds.
What's your take on the possibilities that these craft could be time machines, that what we are seeing aren't extraterrestrial visitations, but visitations from the future?
Well, there's always this possibility that things could come from some other source, but clearly the evidence is of the Egyptian texts themselves, and I give credit to the precursors of Egyptian civilization, we would call the Golden Age, the Age of the Gods, would suggest that in pre-dynastic times, these events were connected more with recognizable events within the context of the human race that had operated in previous cycles of time with Mother Earth as the nexus point, not so much from happenstance situations of outer space visitations that would have no connection.
So I think you have to qualify that. I mean, some of these extraterrestrial and what we would call ultra-terrestrial do have the ability for time manipulation, which would be manipulating the fourth dimension and maybe even the 11th dimension, according to some physicists. But in actuality, for us to be coming backwards in time and forwards in time, there's just so much more life out in space. I don't think we have to be the ones seeing each other as extraterrestrials.
And again, we want to emphasize that UFO should not be a buzzword to understand Egyptology. Egyptology stands on its own ground as having a very legitimate level of wisdom tradition, but it's very, very clear that it does point to all planetary intelligence in the region of Imtzak, the imperishable star god regions, and that somehow the star shafts of the Great Pyramid would be connected with the mythological story of the eternal return or the cosmic reappearance of those that were somehow associated in the region of Orion as a gateway to other levels of cosmic creation.
JJ, I've got to ask you about the Book of Knowledge, The Keys of Enoch. Tell me about that book. That's a fascinating story.
Well, this book is a paraphysical Rosetta Stone, It came as a result of the direct experience I had using harmonics in musical vibrations and intoning certain mantric forms of the names of God, a morphogenic door open that I briefly saw beings of light. I call whole light beings. Some would call them in the historic context of anthropology angelic messengers, and I was taken into an energy biolocation called the Merkaba, and through this I received 64 areas of knowledge that deals with everything from archaeology and biology to future physics or zero-point energy. Now, this was in 1973, long before some of these areas of the new science made their appearance. More specifically, I was shown where there would be evidences in certain parts of the world that would show we are far older as a human race than we think we are, that these ancient archives of information would be databases drawing humanity together, showing that we have more in common rather than in opposition, and that as a result of putting together a clear understanding of the past, we would be psychologically and consciously made more positive towards our future in space, whereby we would discover we are but one of many civilizations in the divine father's house of many mansions, or what we would call the cosmology of a whole new creation.
To name a few things, he mentioned about Orion having an area of being a stellar nursery, and this was only discovered somewhat recently, and also solar flares causing problems on the planet. These are just a few things, but ultimately the keys do wrap up in the sense that we really do have a positive future when we start connecting with our cosmic counterparts.
You know, you just mentioned, Desiree, the sun and its solar activity. It's heating up tremendously, could have a tremendous effect. That could be a reason, too, for visitations, don't you think?
Most definitely. We actually have a whole theory with that, that because people don't understand how solar flares can affect this planetary system because they think we're protected. And not only is our magnetic field, of course, getting weaker, but we do believe that there's some ability for the flares to go into maybe the North and South Pole and go into, I know it sounds a little scientific, but the outer core of the planet, as that heats up, it tries to release that energy, and as it releases it into the mantle, what happens is you end up with volcanoes, you end up with earthquakes, so we end up with more and more problems. And we think the whole heating up of even the Pacific Ocean, what we see with more and more El Niños, is all part of this kind of superswell, if you've heard about the superswell in the Pacific Ocean.
Sure,
yeah,
absolutely.
That this could all be related as one. But we do feel there's a positive future, so we don't want to always be negative.
I was pleased to learn some months ago that Christopher Bird, who was behind the book Secret Life of Plants,
yes,
thought very highly of my book. I was not aware of it. He had recommended it to people on the inside. And in the next chapter to the map of the world that I mentioned, there is a key or section that mentions that we would discover waves coming from music waves coming from the region of Pegasus or Pegasus. And British scientists just a couple years back at the Institute for astronomy, the so-called Chandra area of UK, discovered that from this region waves were coming of music in the region of 54 octaves below concert C. So the specifics are given as to extraordinary details of what would be found in space, as well as at these mathematical regions in Egypt along the Nile. So we're not talking in generalities. We're talking here in specifics of the tomb of Osiris, certain documents that would be found in Upper Egypt, certain areas of Africa and Asia that would give us great insights into our past as well as into our future.
You know, SETI keeps listening for signals. I wonder if one day they will pick up music signals from extraterrestrial sources.
This is always a possibility. However, Peter Sturrock at Stanford University felt that they were off on the wrong frequency, and the electromagnetic area of radio astronomy might be an obsolete area, knowing that we have good evidences of closer ET realities here on Mother Earth. I mean, it's a whole subject that you've covered with your experts from Timothy Goodon up to Nick Pope and others. And I do hope you get amongst your future guests, Stuart Whitman, on your program.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
His son was one of my students when I taught with the Disney Corporation in California years ago.
Small world, J.J.
In any event, to look at the holistic frontier is to draw all of these missing spokes of information together. Where we're looking at context scenarios. We're looking at competitive interests between ancient civilizations and modern civilizations to realize that the themes have not changed that much. We're looking at whole new theories of how we can interpret, really, the whole dilemma we're facing, where we have too much technology that doesn't have a humanistic side. We're looking at the rivalry of technologies in the 21st century without space law in place. We're looking at cultural divisions between various religious systems. All of this requires a much higher consciousness of who we are, where we've come from, and where we're going at this time.
Do you believe that we, as a group of people, can handle the truth about extraterrestrials?
I definitely believe that. I believe that we have already had contact with several different groups of extraterrestrial intelligence. I believe that there is research going on behind the scenes. Those in the world community of Coast to Coast should try to get a hold of a film that one of my relatives produced years ago called Wavelength. Keenan Wynn was the lead actor. It showed the pathology and examination of ET specimens. This was based upon a script that I was familiar with. They should take a look at some of the research going on with some of your other speakers that are looking at the possibility of the story of Dr. Dan Burrish, microbiologist in Area 51, is one of many possibilities, opening, as it were, the door to experiments that are continually taking place right now to look at the specimens of what we have from the EVs that have been collected. I think there's a whole new range of information that is so overwhelming that it requires a higher psychology for this global mind change that we must achieve, and I believe this has to come through prayer and putting our energies together with positive thinking. In other words, if we can create the critical mass through our collective energies together, we can open up also a paraphysical door of contact that can bring a helpful result to the dilemmas we faced as citizens of Mother Earth.
And that's the sad thing, is that the governments really should be helping us to understand this a lot better, and they should be giving us understanding that there are different levels of intelligence. You know, some are here to help us, some are maybe, you know, doing abductions, and they really, we just need to grow into this new cosmology of what we're a part of in the greater universe.
Well, yeah, but they won't do that, Desiree.
I think the old school feel that the information is too overwhelming, and one theology may fall apart versus other possibilities of economic and social collapse. And I think these are good arguments in the context of the Cold War and in the context of the great competition of the superpowers. But we've now seen through the cooperation, but we're taking a great step forward, even with our former adversaries, to map, as it were, a course of cooperation in space. And with the exception of China, I do believe a space law in place can help us achieve the handshake that we need to show our cosmic counterparts, those that are positive, that we're willing and ready to come into a whole new sociology or exo-anthropology of taking up our new birthright as being space kind, no longer humankind, but space kind, with no set limits.
Do you believe that crop formations are messages from extraterrestrials?
I definitely do. I believe that many of them are hoaxed, but according to Colin Andrews and others that I've had a chance to talk with privately, there is a percentage that are legitimate. Interesting, we were at Stonehenge just this past summer, and when we used certain musical sounds, we had African singers that came all the way from Lesotho, South Africa. We did several music experiments at Stonehenge. This is a matter of record. And suddenly, unusual objects appeared around Stonehenge and made triangular patterns. The guards at Stonehenge said they had seen nothing like this in the years of experience there at Stonehenge. So there's definitely a musical and paraphysical clue to how these megalithic centers can be energized. My late friend Gerald Hawkins, who used computers IBM computers to look at Stonehenge in the musical and anthropological context of sound, told me privately he believed that there was a musical pattern behind some of these paranormal geometric shapes. And I do believe this is part of a new vocabulary that we are being indirectly introduced to.
Okay, for anyone who wants information on what you two do, all your websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Which one do you recommend? Futurescience.org?
Futurescience.org. We have a new DVD called Merkaba, which is in seven languages. They can go to, they can see how they can visualize several of these energy centers throughout the world, and I call it swimming in hyperspace, to see the whole context of working with multiple realities simultaneously. They can also pick up on some of the music that we are putting out that we work with, and we have worked with Carlos Santana. We work with many greats like Alice Coltrane. There's wonderful music ahead. We also have several film documents that are also available that I encourage your audience to look into, is filling in the missing pieces of consciousness as the missing link.
Stay with us. We'll be back now with phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, it's phone line time, so the lines are open. We'll be back with our two guests, J.J. Hertak, his wife Desiree Hertak, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We'll take phone calls in just a second with our guests, J.J. and Desiree Hertak. What are you two working on now? What projects are you up to?
We're coming out with this new music with Alice Coltrane. Beloved Alice passed away this past month. We're celebrating her work. As you know, her husband, her late husband, John Coltrane, was one of the great minds of jazz music in the world, and Alice became spiritually aware of how powerful certain mantric forms of energy are in the musical context of jazz and some experimental music. So we've taken the Sanskrit, ancient forms of the Egyptian, Hebrew, Aramaic, and we put this together, and we have orchestrated a whole new form of what could be called super soul music. I feel this will be very effective in reaching young people throughout the world addicted to heavy metal music and what we will call the lower vibrations of self-destruction.
Okay, let's go take the calls. Let's go to our wild card line. First of all, welcome to the show. Hi there.
Yes, good evening, everyone. What an excellent show, George. Just recently getting familiar with your guests. Desiree, I have actually a two-part question, but I want her to clarify after I hang up. He mentioned you were at the University of New York, and I'm wondering which one, you know, the city or the state, and no, what part, because I'd love to be in contact with you. I got a chance, my background is in journalism, and I got a chance to interview a young brother on cable in the city who actually had done a book called The Ankh, and his name actually is a blank to me right now, but he actually showed us how it was a battery. So just continued good luck to your work. My question is, in terms of healing, I am so fascinated by the use of sound and harmonics, you know, in terms of healing. And when I look at my Nexuses and my Atlantis Rising and those type of magazines, I see some people doing interesting work. So that's the first part of my question. The other part of my question is I think, well, it's like a reflection. I think it's very important for us to go back to the original words, and that's why I'm so interested in speaking further with Desiree. This what we call the Sphinx is a Greek word, and the name is Her-Im-Aket, which is H-E-R hyphen E-M and then hyphen A-K-H-E-T, I believe. That's Heru of the horizon. Egypt, what we call Egypt, was Kemet, the black land. So I think if that library that hadn't burned down, you know, we'd have a lot of the pieces. But I'd just like to listen to your comments to my comments, and I greatly appreciate your work, and I will be in further in touch. Thank you so much, George.
Thank you.
Thanks. Go ahead.
And yes, I'm at the State University of New York, and it's really just I teach classes on international relations as the classes, you know, arise in the curriculum. So actually what you were saying about the healing power, I want to jump over to that question on Her-Im-Aket is what she was saying, and that's Horus on the horizon, and that was a signifier for the Sphinx. And we also believe the Sphinx is a type of vehicle because you have the lion, which is always known for the solar power, and then you have this face of, we would say, the pharaoh or higher intelligence on there, and it becomes like literally the ability to go beyond the solar spectrum, so to rise up, becoming kind of a Merkaba. And people are also looking for the second Sphinx. There might be a dual Sphinx in Egypt, so this is very, very interesting and certainly a very powerful symbol, and especially if there is this underground channel that is found along the causeway or connected with the Sphinx to the middle pyramid, this will really be a real transformation of what the ancient Egyptians were all about. And we do believe that they knew how to do healing power. We've done special mantras and sacred expressions in the king's chamber. And for me, not only was there light experiences, but one time the entire walls of the chamber just completely disappeared, and you were almost like outside just by doing these kind of meditations with sacred names. So we do believe that that's really a very powerful thing that the ancients understood. They even made, that's what's really important, they even made the chambers in a sense that would resonate with the special vibration to allow these experiences to take place.
So there was musical entrainment built into the pyramid and into the rooms, which is also the importance of the open tomb in the king's chamber, which represents the human heartbeat in stone, the awakening of the human initiate, symbolic of all humanity coming out of confinement through certain vibrations of raising consciousness and connecting it with the corresponding parts of the greater universe.
Who do you think the architect of the pyramids might have been, and how thorough, obviously, were they?
Well, historically, in the Arabic traditions and in the Hebrew esoteric Kabbalistic traditions, Enoch is recognized as one of the divine prophetic teachers behind the scene who influenced the designers or the great architects. But this was done in two phases. In other words, there was the phase of the golden age or the omnipotent powers, and then there was the phase in the dynastic times of restoring the pyramids. And what we found through ground-penetrating radar and other studies is there's a pyramid within a pyramid. The earlier structures go back to the Enochian archetype in the mathematics of what we find in the original Bible of Enoch's time on Earth gives us the actual circumference of the Great Pyramid. So we can take it on a historic level of architecture, and we could take it also on the level of musical harmonics. And we put the two together, we're going to see an amazing unfoldment. And I think several major film documents this year or next year on the pillars or towers of Enoch will illustrate what we believe to be the earlier phase of how humans were influenced by higher metaphysical concepts.
Next up, East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Good morning.
George.
Hi.
Hey, Ryan in Kansas City. Gosh.
Okay, Ryan. Thanks, Ryan.
Love you. Love the show. And I'll tell you what, I'm doing the darndest to spread the enjoyment of it.
Well, thank you.
I'll tell you what, it's funny that you guys talk about music tonight, because it's always been a kind of theory of mine that that's what the universe is made out of, the vibration of atoms, music, you get me? But I'll tell you what, I'm really enjoying the program this evening, and I'm wanting to ask, because I definitely do believe in the existence of extraterrestrials. How are they going to announce, and how are we going to respond to the existence of extraterrestrials? And I'll leave it to your guest, and wish you all a nice evening.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead.
This is a very good question. I think if we look back to the exciting movie of Steven Spielberg, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, there at the end of the movie, the recapitulation depicts a group of NASA engineers and scientists who are using computers to activate certain musical sounds to some type of ET spacecraft. And that movie had as its advisor Dr. Alan Hynek, who was a Harvard professor, a great thinker, a specialist who was aware of the story behind the story, that there is a musical language system to which the positive ETs correspond with human subjects. I believe this goes all the way to the biblical narratives where the wise men sing to the angels in music at the time of the Christ child's birth. There's a whole tradition in India of how music is used with Krishna. There's a whole tradition of how sacred chants and music figure into the elevation of the human subject. And I believe in some unique way the interfacing of the human race with the positive ETs and ultra-terrestrials will come through the language of sounds and a whole new musical soundscape that will be coordinated with avant-garde musicians and thinkers and creators.
But I think we have to say that in terms of contact, it's going to be still on a one-to-one or one-to-city level, where sometimes now 60 people or 120 people are starting to see these intelligences, but probably a real manifestation won't take place until the planet probably gets a little bit more taxing in terms of its whole technology and its use of military science, and that will bring us together.
Okay, great. Let's go west of the Rockies now. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, George and guests.
Hi.
My name is Karen. I'm from Sacramento. And I wanted to know, seeing as though as the universe is teeming with life, why would the superior ones consider it important to come to the earth and in the form of Jesus and die for the human beings here on earth? What makes us so important in all of the universe?
Well, first of all, the whole death of the Christ is extremely important because what he showed was that he went from the physical body also to a light body, and that shows that we have an evolutionary track, and that shows us that we can go on from this planet to not only outer space, not only to the extraterrestrials, but ultimately to what we call the ultra-terrestrials. So it's important that every life form in the universe that's been protected in its own growth, like in a schoolhouse, like a room in a school or a room in a university, gets the ability to have the master teacher, so to speak, come in and to instruct the students. And so once the students are instructed, there's always that connection and there's always that pathway.
The great apostle Paul writes in the Corinthian correspondence, he was taken up into the third heaven where he heard language that was forbidden to be used. I feel that language experience he's hearing and deals with divine language or chords or symphony-like sounds that John the Divine also speaks of in Revelation, a new song in that higher celestial music that is there latent within human potential, latent within the powers of the soul, is being activated in this process of final change that we go beyond the lower gods into the great wisdom and the experience of the beatific vision of the all of the all.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, let us go to our first-time caller line. Your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is John calling from Maine.
Hey, John,
thanks for
go ahead.
Having me on.
Hi,
my
John.
Pleasure.
Hi. Yeah, I'm really interested in this new paradigm that's emerging, and I have been for a long time. And I wonder if your guest could comment on any thoughts on segueing it into. I've been a fan of the Book of Enoch, and what do you think of communities and what's going to be emerging, particularly in the light of revelation, divine revelation? And do you see any? Are you acquainted with the Urantia book? It seems to me like a lot of these teachings. That's what I've gone towards lately. It seems the most comprehensive. So I wonder if you could comment on that. And, George, I wonder if you could have Gabriel of Sedona as the guest on your show, who's a teacher of these teachings.
Okay, we'll look into that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, the Enochian figure in the biblical context and also in the metaphysical context, who's known in the Arabic as Idris, the great prophet who walked with God, and the Judeo-Christian as one who is exemplifying not physical death, but transformation and ascension, illustrates in so many ways a greater wisdom heritage that affects all Near Eastern people. And I feel if the Enochian concept of the greater astronomy, the greater science, the greater potential is used, that we can work together in a collective balance, a collective harmony through Enochian language, rather than simply setting up physical communities that may not have enough sufficiency in the coming changes to survive unless they're very well bestowed with certain resources and benefactors. The bottom line here is Enoch points to many heavens. There are plus and minus intelligences, and he gives us warning that if we take the wrong course and go with those who violate the human spirit and surrender the human body as a biological battery to the lower extraterrestrial experimenters, we will take a great leap back. And this is why the keys of Enoch in what I wrote in 1973 warn us against those individuals like Semyaza, the lower extraterrestrial overlords that will try to, shall we say, put us back a few notches of our own evolution. So putting this into a larger picture, the right positive psychology, the right positive sociology, in the right context of human relations has to be used with the dialogue of science and religion to bootstrap a whole new paradigm of seeing the future as a great opportunity for graduation rather than a mystery that keeps us locked in the caves of disillusion, disappointment, and degeneration of effort.
JJ, do you think we can handle the truth of extraterrestrials, or would we collapse? Would religions collapse? Would belief in God collapse?
I believe we live in the age of Dijkstra and Steven Spielberg and others who've prepared over the last 30-some years a whole new culture of realizing the positive and the creative aspects that pulsate with our heart with a sense of pride, of purpose, and this great ascent, what we would call the discovery of independent civilizations in space that share the same Godhead that we do through the ultra-terrestrial, bring us into a resolution of conflict where we become aware of intelligent life, its variety. We become aware of many civilizations in the pluralistic sense of change. We also recognize that the ET has been part of that upward push and that we need to not worship ET reality, but to go beyond that, to reclaim our God-given abilities of consciousness, expansion, creativity, and what scientists would call entropy control. In other words, the second law of thermodynamics that says everything is going to decay, that can be reversed, and the paraphysical can somehow support a whole new reality that we will merge with in the next 10 to 20 years. I believe that everything is going to change as we know it on our planet so fast that we have to fasten our seatbelts. And we have to become aware of our nakedness and our humility that we are but one of several civilizations that share a much greater design of life. We have to overcome the fear factor and what I will call the three Vs of quote-unquote bitching, backbiting, and blaming the divine figure for all of our problems on our planet. We've got to grow up and take responsibility as cosmic citizens.
Did you know, do you know Ingo Swann?
Ingo Swann illustrated the copy of my recent book, The End of Suffering, with Russell Targ, a great master of art. He shows on the picture of our book the cosmic egg, and within the cosmic egg we see whirling galaxies, which means this ancient Sanskrit symbol of realizing the power of the mind has the ability to open up the shell of Mother Earth and to see the mystery of the greater design of whirling galaxies within the power of our own consciousness. And I know you're going to speak about the eggs with Dr. Radin.
Yes.
We found an interesting story in Brazil. Years ago, we were working with Thomas Morton Green, and the eggs with Brazilian academics, he was able to use certain mantric sounds of music, and suddenly the eggs began to crack open. And chicks manifested in a matter of a few minutes rather than longer periods of time, showing a higher physics of changing, as it were, the liquids of the embryonic material with mind over matter. So, again, the egg that's there on the cover of our book illustrates many realities of our inner nature coming
to
the surface.
Okay, stick with us. We'll be back with final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we started with 8,000 books left for Worker in the Light during the first printing, and I think we're down to like 1,000 left, and then it's done. So wipe it out if you would. Amazon.com is selling the book at a steep discount, Worker in the Light. It's also available at your favorite bookstores. I think you'll enjoy it. We had a book signing in Austin, Texas over the weekend, And lots of people really had a great time just thumbing through it. So it's called Worker in the Light. Steep discount on Amazon.com or out there at your favorite bookstore. I'm guessing there's about 1,000 left, and then the first printing is over. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's go to final calls. This last half hour is going to go by quickly. Wildcard Line, thanks for holding. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
George, how you doing this evening?
Good, sure. Thank you so much.
I'm David Oldham, and I have a two-part question. I am an abductee from 1966 and worked with Dr. Hynek, Ted Blocher, and Bud Hopkins. And during my regression, which took about 2 years' worth of work in New York City, I was shown a device that has to do with sound. And I've been chasing this ever since this experience was uncovered, and I actually did a radio show called Music to Heal the Heart for about 5 years, and I still haven't put my finger on it. And I was just wondering what JJ might suggest in relationship. I had a real difficult time under hypnosis, extremely difficult. The vibration of the craft and me getting into that atmosphere or that scenario to interact with them was extremely taxing on my body. But I know that this instrument is to be brought forward. It's almost, it looks similar to two crescent moons that are backed up to one another. And there was a frequency involved, but beyond that, I can't step into what I need to do with this.
This is a very good question. I've been working with several musicologists in Arizona and California. We have a special music lab doing certain tests. If you're kind enough to give to George your telephone number and address off mic, I'll email you and be in touch with you. I know Bud Hopkins is a dear friend of mine, and I'm familiar with the legitimate case studies that have gone on very, very high levels of people in government that have had profound experiences with musical vibrations. We believe, Desiree and I, in the many years of work, that the human body is a musical instrument, and if it can be tuned properly, you can see other paraphysical aspects. Matter, as we know it, is gravitationally trapped light, according to the keys of Enoch. If we have the key of music or the right vibratory system, we can experience tremendous realities with the built-in sound structure of our body, called technically the inner symphony, the sound structures that are being processed all the time through our cells. Although we cannot hear it in our audible range, we are still functioning as a vibratory biocomputer. So I'd like to meet with you and discuss the musicology of what's being done behind the scenes and how this will factor into a whole new aspect of acoustics and the new physics of consciousness.
Okay, we'll put you on hold, and we'll get his email address for you, JJ, and we'll get it right out to you. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi, this is Ted. I'm in Albany, New York.
Okay, Ted, go ahead.
I've got a question for JJ. First, I'd like to fire off a couple rapid-fire comments. That I think if the late great Terrence McKenna is listening tonight, he would love this conversation. And he had a lot to do with harmonic situations. He saw his brother produce some kind of obsidian-colored substance from his body while using harmonic methods. And I'd also like to say that if we get together as a world nation or a planetary body, get off this planet, we're going to see something like we see in Star Wars, where we have a galactic council and we're one of 2,000 different civilizations that have to kind of vie for a position in the galaxy. And my question to JJ is, as far as science fiction goes, I liked a lot of what I read in my younger days. I read a lot of Ray Bradbury and Isaac Asimov, and it seems that science fiction seems to dictate almost a lot of what we go through in the future. And what would you have to say about that?
Well, like your illustrations, in fact, Star Wars was a great watershed in terms of getting people involved in recognizing their other cultures. Unfortunately, several government levels of putting information together never get beyond the bar scene of Star Wars, where you have these grotesque beings fighting with each other, to the latter parts of the Star Wars story, where you see Obi-Wan Kenobi, it's kind of late New York time,
But you see the other characters of this celestial family in harmony, and I think the story of growing up does use certain traditions and motifs of science fiction now to the big screen, and this is going to be a continuous teaching tool to get people aware that we're going beyond science fiction. We're going into the real reality of face-to-face contact with other worlds very, very soon, and people need to change their vibrations.
And I'm a big sci-fi fan, and I personally like Stargate. And, of course, they have the different levels of intelligence. They have the ancient ones, or the ancients, that are not around anymore, but they left a lot of artifacts. And sometimes the ancients show up, and they're able to be light beings and transform themselves and become thought forms and different things like that. So I think that's really close to reality.
That's
okay, great. Thank you, Ted. Hope that worked out for you. Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. I have a picture from the South African Museum, and many miners have dug up metal spheres, which are over 2,800 million years old, which is 30 million centuries before man evolved. And the picture shows the curator of the museum holding in his palm of his hands a highly polished metal sphere. Around the equator are three rims, and they can't figure out why it moves. It turns, it makes two revolutions in 1 year. So they cut up some of these spheres, and they found there's two kinds of spheres. One is a solid bluish sphere with that has white flecks in it, and another one is a hollow that has a white spongy center.
All right, if I can inject, I think this is very important. I was at Klerksdorp in South Africa to get several exhibits of this for private investigations at Jet Propulsion Lab in California, and we cut into one of the spheres, and what we found was aluminum silicate powder, which was strange because of the lack of magnetic properties. As the spheres were put in a glass box and watched, each sphere, of which there were 14 different categories, would rotate at least twice per year. And this was an anomaly that cannot be explained because around the center or equator of each sphere, there are three lines perfectly sealed like a cap of, or a belt would be sealed around its equator. So these are anomalies which the Zulus and the native Africans feel were gifts of the gods left behind as time capsules for realizing there was a great civilization in the past tense. Time periods have suggested these could have been there for several millions of years, if not billions of years. It's hard to explain this to the radio audience without seeing pictures, but clearly they will be in one of our documentaries called The Voice of Africa, and we've been privileged to be one of the first groups to bring this out to Western scientists to look at in great detail.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Good morning.
Hi, George.
Yes, take it away.
Hi. Hi, this is Jean from Lodi, California.
Okay, Jean.
And I just had a short story I wanted to share with you. My father is a retired Air Force pilot, and he retired in 1962. And about 10 years ago, I asked him, I said, Dad, do you know anything about the Roswell incident? And he said, no, anything. He said, I saw the pictures. And I said,
what?
You saw the pictures? Yeah. He said, I saw the pictures. He said, I said, what pictures? And he said, of the aliens. He said, they were real. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. He said, but at that time it was top secret, and I couldn't even come home and talk to your mother about it.
Did you believe him?
Of course. My dad doesn't lie.
Well,
you know,
I want to make sure
that was made of some of the aliens in a tent that was constructed, and I know a little bit of the story. Also, one of the aliens did survive and was assigned to one of our military commanders and did live for a short time afterwards.
Well, J.J., why didn't his own kind come back and get him?
I think that was part of the experiment that they deliberately left behind their counterparts to show us that we were in a process of planetary orientation that would take upwards of 50 to 70 years to complete. There's reason to suspect that there were other situations where the ETs could have easily retrieved their technology but chose not to do that to show our military higher-ups that they could outmaneuver our V-2s being tested at White Sands. They could do all sorts of things to, as it were, put a canopy around our nuclear playthings at that particular time. I think when we put out the atomic bombs in 45, we showed the higher intelligence we had lost control of the world and have been on a technological slide since that time. It's going very, very rapidly now. And as we reach critical mass, we've got to put all of these questions and realities into a big hamper where people can begin to see the positive side of how our ancestors did survive, and we have God-given gifts to survive if we can see beyond the horizon that there is a bright frontier of the house and many mansions, the Christ figure referred to. I think if we take the serious upper spiral rather than the lower spiral, we can get ourselves psychologically prepared for a great quantum change of transformation.
Okay, we'll take some more calls. West of the Rockies, it's your turn.
Hey there, George. This is Martin calling from Everett, Washington, 570 KVI.
Absolutely.
I barely get it, but I listen.
No, it's number one in Seattle.
Yeah, two quick comments and a brief question. My comments, first of all, I'm a musician, and I just want to, as other musicians would probably agree, when you're playing with a group of people and you're in the zone, so to speak, and everything's just right there, it literally does move you. Your body does go in an area that's hard to explain to the audience unless they were musicians, and just harmonics. It's just such a wonderful feeling being a musician and creating sounds and music and just, you know. So I wanted to throw that out there. I did want to take issue, though, with a comment that they said, JJ said, about heavy metal. It seemed pretty narrow-minded. Not all of heavy metal is, you know, demonic or whatever you want to use for a word. There's some pretty intelligent heavy metal bands out there that play wonderful music. You play Rush quite a bit in your bumper music, and sure. I use them as an example. So not all heavy metal is a negative vibe. My question is there specific keys or specific notes one could play to listen to get one out of depression or, you know, suicidal type thoughts?
Well, there's a series of, we're working with musicians throughout the world from Peter Volger, the contemporary German composer who has written several outstanding albums that you can get to on our website, keysofenoch.org, to other composers who have worked with the soundtracks of Star Wars and Indiana Jones. And I did not want to imply that all heavy music is negative, and I certainly would not use the word demonic. It's only in the context of heavy music with happenings of drug cultures that we have situations that are very unpleasant. And I have seen this when I taught at the university of the drug cultures and what feeds into that. So please understand that we're open to all forms of creative music so long as we understand that there's a higher music harmonic that raises consciousness and shows humanity is one in all of its great blessings.
And I think one of the things that we have available for people who have depression is a CD called Wings of Healing, and this is affirmation. So you start changing your thought form. One of the things with depression is you're always thinking negatively, and if you change it into love and forgiveness, and with sacred music behind it and higher vibrations, it really changes the way you think. And this is one of the things, of course, with contact with extraterrestrials as well. You start seeing a greater reality, and you start not limiting yourself to just this planetary system. And when you just see this planetary system is all there is, then you start getting negative as well.
This album, Wings of Healing, has been used by members of the Japanese royal family who had severe illness, and the affirmations are fabulous. If you get a chance really to get this as a CD or a audio cassette, please take time to listen to the affirmations and the attunable medicines that's there, that we must change our focus from negativity to positive change so we can bootstrap each and every level within the energies of our body complex.
Wildcard Line, welcome to the show. You're up. Hello.
Hi, my name is Ty. I'm calling from San Antonio.
Hi, Ty. Sure thing.
I had a question for both of your guests. They said earlier that they have some vibrations to help, that help the evolutionary change in other things. I wondered if they were looking for the vibrations to help humanity as a whole, make that next evolutionary step.
Well, yes, we're all DNA parts of a larger being. There's one being on this planet called the human race or the human being, and we've looked at the contours of music from the DNA in our body to the music holistically that can bring communities together, as we've demonstrated in Africa, in South America, where we got tribes that were in opposition to resolve their differences by using music, spiritual music with certain mantric forms of energy or divine language as the way of unity. So there's a whole science here of the music of light that we feel is something that should be looked at by those in our global radio audience that may look at the new music of the future and how we can build that soundscape. It will work very effectively, and I believe it's one of the missing tools of the new anthropology sociology that will build bridges of understanding.
And this is, of course, the goal of Alice Coltrane at the end of her life, was to bring together East and West and show how people of all races, of course, she being black and working with us with white, you know, can just all of us be together in one great harmony.
Okay, let's go to one quick last call. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. I only have a minute left. Go ahead.
Oh, I know. I only had a minute last time. This is Danny from Las Vegas, and it's an honor to be on the show again. And
thanks.
Again, George, I do not believe in coincidence. I do. There is no coincidence. Anyways, again, I had to say that, I mean, every topic, everything that he's mentioned.
Danny, are you there?
Well, can I just finish by saying that the universe is a harmony of phases of movements, and we are seeking this greater harmonic of human civilization as we merge now with these challenges of the 21st century. One of the reports that Timothy Good refers to speaks of an American military general who's acknowledging that we've already begun this war in space, and I think we must see ourselves also as peacemakers going beyond the war scenarios in space. We must recognize that there are two realities side by side, the lower spiral and the upper spiral. We can bootstrap our abilities to see that we have a future, a great design ahead of us, then we can achieve really the God-given abilities we have to emerge as Homo noeticus, cosmic intelligence with the divine. And
JJ
in this process,
Desiree,
the infinite way, the infinite mind and the infinite specieshood will be reconnected with the harmonic of our soul.
Thank you so much for being on the program, both of you. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.